From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
And the Media Project is back on the air for another week. Thank you for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed your Thanksgiving weekend. Hope you have some room for more turkeys. We've got several of them in the room here today.
I resent
you
that.
Like that?
Ira, that's like an Allen line. No. Aren't you shocked?
It's being in this chair.
Like that.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, it's being in this chair. It changes. It's like with Trump. You get into the chair, you feel you can do anything.
You have the power.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm Ira Fussfeld. As Rick Smith would say, the longtime publisher of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York. And as I am quick to add, now retired. So keep those phone calls away from me, please. Thank you. Sorry your delivery was late this morning. Alan Shartok is here, the chief cook and bottle washer at WAMC Northeast Public Radio, professor emeritus at State University of New York, publisher of the Legislative Gazette, and Rosemary Armeo, director of the journalism program at the University of Albany. I think that's the title,
that's
no?
That's it.
Excellent. And investigative reporter and editor and all-around good egg, no turkeys in the room. Hello, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. You too.
All right, we're going to talk about Trump. You've heard of him. And it's, you know, I was thinking as I was driving up, I've been doing this program on and off a long time and through three different presidential administrations prior to this one. And I don't remember us ever speaking about the three prior presidents nearly as much as we've already talked about Trump. Do you agree? Or we just, is my memory bad?
Well, he's an incredible marketer. We know that from the way that he won the election. We know that from the way that, for example, he's picking his cabinet right now, and the news media are watching very carefully as each person comes in and out or tramps in and out to the Trump, see tramps in Trump, residences or golf courses, all of which carry the Trump brand. This has, of course, led many of the newspapers, Washington Post, the New York Times, and others, to talk about the constitutional provision prohibiting presidents from accepting emoluments from foreign governments. This is something that the press is going to be doing. Now, Rosemary, I know you've been very good about looking at the way in which we do our press, the gaggle who comes after the president and now is very angry that he won't take them everywhere. You think that's all a bunch of nonsense, don't you?
I do. And I think that Trump has been playing the press like a fiddle, and we better get smart. We thought he was going to go away. That was wrong. He's going to be here at least 4 years. God help us, maybe more. And that means
maybe
we have
less.
Well, right. But that means we have to figure out quick how to deal with him. And we're still doing a horrible job. He is leading and setting the agenda, starting with why are we talking about Hamilton, for example, when he is, as you say, really skirting the Constitution with he says there are no laws that really govern conflict of interest in the presidency. Other people say, well, it's right there in the Constitution. But he's got his kids going into meetings. He wants his son-in-law, who's not even 30 and has no experience other than being rich, to solve the two-state problem in Israel and Palestine. And at the same time, he is doing business on our time, on government time. And that's what he does not want us to write about.
So why is it then that the major anchors and executives of the TV networks agreed to meet with him on his turf and that the ground rules was off the record? What is this off the record business?
Total vanity.
The three of us
have all been
in circumstances where people have asked us to do off the record and probably have done off the record. But maybe we should explain to the listeners why somebody would agree to an off the record situation.
In this case, Ira, I cannot, because they should not have to.
And the New York Times basically didn't.
And the New York Times was, they finally stood firm. But Wolf Blitzer was there, and all kinds of bigwigs, many of them TV, but not just TV, and they pay attention to the flattery being accorded them the president wants to meet with you. That's hot. Okay. And doesn't want anybody else, so we're going to go in. And they think they're going to get something out of it, so they make a deal.
See, I see it entirely differently, Rosemary. Okay. You know, I think your point is extremely well taken. Flattery helps and all the rest. However, I think there is basically intimidation involved here. It doesn't have to be said, or else. And you take my rules, or else. And when you come, I'm going to beat the heck out of you. I'm going to tell you, you've been doing a lousy job. You've covered me unfairly. Now, as the great political scientist Neustadt wrote, you know, this is the law of anticipated reaction. I mentioned this just the other day, that the Times Union of Albany, New York, had a reporter covering City Hall. And the mayor, Mayor Corning, the legendary Mayor Corning, decided he didn't like the actions of this reporter. So he said, okay, I'm never talking to you again for the rest of your life. And they had to take the reporter off the beat. I mean, you know, that's at the very minimum that kind of thing. But these people own other, well, they own property.
They didn't have to take him off the beat. Well, I can see Ira bursting.
Well, no, I mean, we've all experienced that. I certainly did when I was publishing a newspaper. The local people would stop talking to you, or they would threaten and sometimes act and take your legal notices away so you'd lose a revenue stream. But I'm trying to get my arms around why these guys and gals in the broadcast press, unlike the New York Times, having the opportunity to gather with Trump, agreed to a ground. What did they think they were going to
do? I'm telling you, it's the law of unanticipated reaction, which is when you wake up in the middle of the night and say, this guy's the president of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, and he can kill you if he wants to. And in the middle of the night, you start to think about all the things that he could do to hurt you.
You're talking about monetarily?
Monetarily, business-wise, arrest-wise, looking into your divorce records, and all the rest of it.
They're just playing by the old rules, which you're being nice. Okay, it's a whole new game because now he's in, so we're going to try again. And so they bent over backwards. You may be right. You may totally be right. I just don't think it's that well thought out. What I do think the press has to spend time on is what they control, not the part that Donald Trump controls, but we do. So the gaggle that's following people
yes.
around, the ridiculous heated tents outside of his golf course while we await for him to make announcements. Why are we doing that? Wait till he comes out with an announcement and then cover it.
I was going to get to that, but let's go back to the gaggle. So the argument is that the press or a pool needs to follow him wherever he goes in case something happens.
Basically, it's
a death watch.
Yeah.
So he goes out to a restaurant, and the public is saying, well, why does he doesn't have to be there. He's going to dinner. Let him have dinner with his family.
I agree with
them. We don't want to, but what happens if he chokes on a ham sandwich?
Then the guy sitting next door with his cell phone, Ira, is going to pick it up and get it on film. And that's the whole thing. These rules were made when we did not have the technology mm-hmm. we do now. We don't have to be with him every minute. It's a big waste of time. Not only that, he uses it to his advantage to show, oh, here I am with Melania showing her off and everybody loves us at dinner. It's great for him. He's making the mistake not wanting the press pool. It's overwhelmingly good coverage, unless he dies and then he doesn't really care.
Well, but Rosemary, the reason he didn't want the press pool, the reason he was to discipline them and to tell them, I can take stuff away from you.
Now, there I do agree with you. He definitely has his finger on the press, and he's going to keep doing that. He is definitely using all of the methods of people who wanted to control the press ever.
Limiting
who comes in, making his own kind of announcements and bypassing the press. These little videos that are coming out now. Here's what I'm going to do my first 100 days. That wasn't at a press conference. It was a video made under his auspices with all of his people there making him look good. This is propaganda we're getting.
Well, it certainly is, including the tweets.
Yeah, but I was going to get to that, though. But the tweets or even the propaganda videos that you suggest, isn't that just a modern version of a press release? And the New York Times gets the video?
No, it is not.
They don't have to use it.
No, it is not because of the access. It doesn't matter. We are irrelevant. The legacy press is irrelevant.
Having nothing to do with Trump.
It's on the Internet. I didn't go, for example, to the New York Times or the Times Union to see that video. It's on the Internet. It's all over Facebook. He has bypassed us.
Okay, but if he had put out a press release that said the same thing as the video, he could have posted that on the Internet as well. So,
well, what's the advantage? What's the difference? You do it in video because that's what young people watch.
Exactly. But your point is that he's bypassed the press. The technology enables any politician to do that.
Correct.
Again, we've seen that ourselves on our own markets.
We have never seen it at the level that Donald Trump has been using it, Ira. That's just wrong.
Let me give you one example of what I was talking about before when I said the law of anticipated reaction.
This is like a lecture, isn't it? silence. Oh my God. I've got my notebook. I have it. It's underlined.
I have two professors in the room, and I'm just a lowly student.
I was going to make that point, Ira. You know, she's a professor also.
Yes.
And,
but I'm just asking the questions.
No,
you're, this is going to be on the quiz.
Okay.
So he says, the New York Times, you're the failing New York Times. It was little Marco.
Yeah,
but then when he leaves the New York Times, he calls him the crown jewel of news.
Well, you know, Ira, you said something to me earlier today before we were on the air, which is that he's one of these guys who the last person in the room, he says whatever he wants to, and you want to believe him.
Well, the last person in the room is the one who influences him most.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Not that I know what any of it means, but we used to have a dean at the college at New Paltz where I taught, and we used to say of this guy, you know, the last guy in the room, so you always want to be the last guy in the room. You don't want to be the guy before the last guy in the room. So if he says, I honor the New York Times, you've got a jewel there, but you're also the failing thing. Now, listen, there are stock prices, right? There are stock prices.
They got 40,000 new subscriptions since the election.
Yeah. Well,
people are afraid that they'll be cut off from real news that doesn't come through
the
White House Trump Tower.
So isn't the answer what is being advocated by old-time journalists like Dan Rather or Christiane Amanpour, who in effect are saying, we've got to stand up to this guy. We're not supposed to be liked. Our job is to report on this guy, to analyze this guy, and it's not to sit with him and worry about what he thinks about us. We just have to do our job.
Well, but isn't there a difference between a Christiane Amanpour and the person who has to worry about whether CNN is going to get everything it needs sitting at the very top?
No, there isn't. And Christiane Amanpour is right. We need to get back to our basic values, which are we're not the news story. Look at all the coverage. We're sitting here with pages in front of us about whether he's going to meet or not with the New York Times and what Wolf said at the meeting and whether you make an agreement that you're going to be off the record and then you're live tweeting and what the heck is going on. We became the stars of our own stories. We need to go after the news. And if he doesn't want to let us come into the White House and talk to us, then fine, then go someplace else. I would not be sitting outside his golf courses waiting for announcements.
That particular coverage, particularly by CNN, has really aggravated me. And it's not just been CNN, but, you know, today Rudy Giuliani is going to be the Secretary of State. Tomorrow Nikki Haley is going to be the Secretary of State. Next day it's Mitt Romney. Fourth day it's back to Rudy Giuliani again.
It's reality TV. This is The Apprentice all over again. Who's going to be in? Who's going
to
be out?
I want to go back to something we talked about before, and Ira did, about choking on the ham sandwich.
Ira, you talk about that? Wow.
Yes, I was going to make a Mama Cass reference, but that was never proven. That's folk legend.
Okay,
that's how she died.
It may have been It may have been false news.
Yes.
Okay.
False news. Right.
So Ira, you were an editor, you were a publisher, and somebody misses a major story, and the Poughkeepsie Journal gets it, or the Albany Times Union gets it. It's nice for Rosemary to say, we have to stop doing that. Somebody will take a picture. But do you fire that reporter who wasn't there?
I don't know, but we're talking about in the case of Trump, a pool. There's one representative of the press and one representative of broadcast, and they're reporting back to the rest of us.
You know, I would go beyond what you said. I think the scoop is an old concept now. You put out a story now and say it's the Boston Globe. Well, it's going to be all over the internet and Facebook. Then everybody else has it. And the next hour, forget the next day, the next hour, no one remembers who originates it. What you get remembered for now are the stories like the Washington Post and the New York Times come out with, which are so extraordinary and so deeply dug up that no one else thought to look at it.
Yeah.
That's how you get advantage today.
Well, let's run that back just for a moment, because I agree with your premise, because it's going to be the Washington Post is reporting today. That's got to be worth an awful lot to the Washington Post.
People don't remember that anymore. It's fleeting. When it was in print, if the Washington Post had a story today, it was there for 24 hours before the New York Times could catch up. Now, first of all, somebody will catch up within 5 seconds. And secondly, there's less of a reluctance to credit who did the initial story, because down the road, it's going to be reversed.
So the Watergate story between the Washington Post and the New York Times.
Different thing.
That was an ongoing story.
That was ongoing. Yeah. And actually, the New York Times did not cover it because the old rules then applied. If we don't have the story, it doesn't exist. I don't think that would happen now. But the stories we're talking about here are Rudy Giuliani is named, whatever it is he's going to be named.
Or
will be named. So that goes in the Washington Post. Why? No one cares. It's an announcement. It really is a press release.
Let me just and I understand, and I defer to both of your superior knowledge to things.
That's newspaper. Good. You should. Yeah.
I thank you, and you can write to her for that condescending remark. At Rosemary Armeo.
I was complimenting your good judgment.
Yeah, you want
all.
Condescending, yeah. You found the right place.
Yeah, right. No, but I'm saying I think it means a great deal. If your reporters, if you break the story, even though you're both so sure that it doesn't matter anymore, I think it does.
See, I think it will matter, for example, in the case of the Washington Post reporter who's been dogged and way ahead of everybody else investigating the Trump family.
And who should get a Pulitzer
David
Prize.
Fahrenholt. A Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah,
well, that's
Fahrenholt.
That
Amazing.
He owns that story, and it's through the consistency of his reporting that he is becoming known for that. If the Washington Post had a story today and that was the end of the story, nobody would think about it.
And it isn't just David Fahrenholt is amazing, but it's a team. The Washington Post is living what I'm talking about. Today there's a story by Robert O'Hara, another one of their investigative reporters, and he's looking at Steve Bannon. He's checking where he's been getting money from. It's not just Breitbart. Pretty interesting stuff.
What's he finding?
He's finding that he's taking money from these odd little nonprofits, and there's a connection between the nonprofits and spitting out hatred against Hillary Clinton and Democrats. It's all political and nonprofit all wrapped up together. Very interesting, very deep, and that's what we ought to be writing about. There's so much stuff. What are 500 companies that Trump owns? That's what I heard
something
on the
like
news.
That, yeah.
500 overseas companies. We need to be looking at them. What are their ties with the government in those other places? We know he's not breaking news here, but news is breaking about him in other places, in Argentina and Japan, for example. We need to be developing ties over there. Let us not forget that all of this is happening to newspapers and news. It's being under attack by Trump at a time when there are very few resources.
Okay, now
it's in decline.
What you've been talking about, Rosemary, of course, is what should be. Now I want to talk to you guys about what would be, what is.
And we guys are Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, and Rosemary Romeo, and this is the Media Project.
So my
Ooh,
question
nice.
Is, do you believe that, as you put it, the legacy media will be brought to heel by Trump?
I'm going to go at it from a different angle. At the off-the-record meeting that he had with the broadcast executives and at the meeting the next day on the record with the New York Times, at the beginning of the meeting, he used some time to list his complaints.
He let them have it.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'm glad you put it that way because I finally found a story that what I was looking for and finally found it in a David Remnick of the New Yorker column was that voices were not raised. In other words, he didn't yell at him. Well, again, the three of us have been on the other end of meetings or phone calls with politicians or business people who have come in or called us and said, we don't like your coverage and here's why. We don't like that. We would love to hear them say, boy, you guys did a great job. But the reality is we are going to get those complaints. So if Trump came in and listed his grievances, so what? That's part of the job. Why was that such a big part, particularly of the off-the-record meeting?
Because we violated our own rules and made ourselves the star of the story. Oh, Trump is coming after us. We're a big deal. That's what we did. And we have consistently violated our rules on Trump. The one about we're objective. We don't take a side. Overwhelmingly, the press took a side this time. And I'm not just talking about editorials where we have a right to express opinion, but there's a professor at UAlbany, Bruce Miroff, who took a look at the tweets of reporters covering Trump. Their tweets, right?
Reporters
not what they were writing.
Trump's right.
Yeah.
And it's overwhelmingly negative and biased. We have to stop this. We have to go back to the old rules.
What's happened, and I was there at the beginning of it, is that when we were encouraging our people to go on social media to expand our brand and our footprint, we told reporters to go ahead and tweet. And so that quickly evolved into reporters starting to give their opinion. That has undercut us.
I think Rosemary is really onto something. And I think
I'm agreeing with her.
That this may be a place that we actually do agree. I think what happened was that the Washington Post, the New York Times, and others said the election of Donald Trump is so dangerous that we are going to throw objectivity to the wind.
Yes, I agree with that.
And frankly, I'm pleased with that decision.
I actually think it was noble.
Yeah, it was noble. It was the right thing to do, except that he's got them now. You know,
now we have to pay the price for that.
Yes, he's got them now, and he says, look, you guys have been unfair. Can you imagine what it is to be sitting there on Saturday night, watching Saturday Night Live, and watching Alec Baldwin come out and make a complete buffoon out of you week after week after week. So then you get very, and by the way, he's not the first one. I remember Mario Cuomo when they did a shtick in which they were sitting around and another guy says to Cuomo, you can't be president because you're in the mafia. Well, Cuomo went ballistic. I'll tell you right now.
Well, that's different than doing sarcasm. I mean, politicians, presidents of the United States have been made fun of by Saturday Night Live, by Will Rogers, by editorial page cartoonists. But Trump is the only one who really rises to the bait.
But Ira, he's not the only one who has ever done it. NPR did a great story the other day about how Kennedy was good with the press when they asked him if he didn't like it. And he said, no, I don't like it. You know, Vaughn Meader, who was imitating him, but that he really did instruct Pierre. Wait. He did say to Pierre Salinger, go figure out how to put a stop to this, and maybe we should talk to the FCC or something like that. I think, look, people have been responding to this kind of thing this way.
Well, the Alien and Sedition Acts in the very early days of the country.
So why is Trump being vilified?
Because Trump is different. He's not being vilified. Trump is different in his reaction to it. And again, I go back to technology. It's the president himself. It isn't through an intermediary. It isn't like something reported on. It's Trump himself in the middle of the night is saying, I don't like Alec Baldwin and Saturday Night Live and Hamilton are overrated. We've never seen it before, and we react to the novelty.
So if Trump were to use Twitter as often as he currently uses Twitter, but used it to do things other than these kinds of what we would call crazy, I guess, kinds of comments that are below the office of the president. If he used Twitter to make it routine announcements, he expressed regrets about the bus accident, the school bus accident. If he used it that way, would you still oppose his use of Twitter?
I'm not sure that I oppose it. I think it's something we have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And again,
what's the difference in putting out a press release and saying
it's a big difference because you immediately bypass the whole press. You just go right around them. It's your words directly there.
So we do have a First Amendment problem. No question about it. I believe that the press is under attack by Trump and that he wants to have his way with them and that he'll do whatever he has to. But I don't see that you're going to stop him from sending out a tweet on any issue he wants.
I have no desire to stop him. What I want us to do is reassess what we do with those tweets. Emily Thorson, Boston College, really excellent political scientist, talks about how people don't use Twitter. It's not a mass media yet. However, journalists use it all the time, especially political journalists. So Trump puts something out, and we turn it into stories and videos and lots of discussions. We're the ones doing it, not Trump. That
megaphone
effect.
So what do you do? You ignore the tweet?
We certainly reevaluate them. Like, did Hamilton deserve 4 days of commentary? We talked more about Hamilton than we did about Trump University or Ivanka speaking to the Japanese prime minister.
And yet, I'm going back to you. What do you do? He says something on a tweet, and you know it's good news, and the Hamilton thing happened, and, you know, he writes that Pence has been badly handled by everybody, and that this is a terrible thing. What do? You ignore it?
I'm not sure that you have to ignore it. I think you have to just put it in perspective. Maybe one reporter looking at that, five working on his taxes.
Well, the New York Times is reporting it on page B7.
There you go.
And the broadcast, particularly CNN and MSNBC are reporting it all day. Now, I understand in part why that is, because theoretically they have a different audience every hour or so, but they're the ones keeping it alive. I don't know whether I would do it differently if I was them because of that reason. You do have an audience that changes, just like radio. You know, if you wanted to talk about Trump and Hamilton at 9 o'clock and somebody turns on the station at 4 o'clock, would you feel an obligation to report it then because maybe they didn't hear it at 9
o'clock?
And
you just explained the dumbing down of America, that we're giving people, this is like little candy, ear candy. In the top of the hour, get 5 minutes on Hamilton. And yet, isn't there some way we could figure out how to write about what does the Constitution say about being a businessman in office? We've never had a businessman on this scale in that office.
Well, there's stuff being written about that. I want to say one last thing, and that is, I want to say one last thing, and that is that I'm looking at the way in which CNN is being perceived. During the election cycle, everybody was turning into CNN all day long. I can't tell you how many people come up to me and say, I will not turn the television on. I will not. The news is so bad for them. Trump has been elected. I'll bet they've lost a third of their audience.
It's temporary.
Well, they would lose, until the next crisis. I'm disappointed that CNN is continuing with these so-called panels now that the election is over.
I hate them. I hate the panels.
And you know, just from whether or not I agree with the panelists, they're basically saying, here's today's news. Let's discuss it with the panel. Oh, no, we don't. Let's give me some more news.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff.
I couldn't agree with both of you.
All right. Well, that's a great way to end. This is it for the Media Project for this week. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ira Fussell with Rosemarie Romeo and Alan Shartok. Tune in again next week for the Media Project.
That's a good idea, Ira. And I just want to say, I know that the program is over now.
So
but
now
I
you'll
to,
say
but,
something
but
nice.
But I want to say one more thing, and that is we work real hard to keep an eye on ourselves, and we'd love to hear from you. And you can just write us at media@wamc.org.
Excellent.
It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.